You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Surfing Corporate, the podcast that helps you navigate tricky corporate waters. I'm Aileen Metasiel.
And I'm Glenda Pakkinen. And today we're tackling a topic that is unavoidable no matter what type of job, industry, or place on the corporate ladder you're on. We're talking about dealing with difficult people at work. Not that that's ever happened to us, Aileen, ever.
I've only met people that exude joy and rainbows.
Well, we all know that a big part of being successful in a corporate job is having the skill set to handle people with, quote, challenging personalities.
So in the workplace, you're going to be surrounded by people from different ages, races, ethnicities, senses of humor. Every colleague has a unique blend of good shit, bad shit, weird shit, and even some psycho shit.
Yeah, it's worse than having crazy roommates. Not that I had any, but it really is. But you can at least avoid some of those crazy roommates by locking your door. But at work, you can't. You have to collaborate and brainstorm and delegate and produce quality work with people you may not even actually like at all. People that may give you bad vibes, or people that might even purposely want you to fail. Can you imagine?
No, never seen that either. Never. Of course, there might be nice people who are happy for you when you succeed. It does happen from time to time. But this episode is about figuring out how to survive coworkers or bosses that make you nuts and even make you question your sanity.
And having said all of that, it's time to introduce and say hello to our guest today. It's Richard Bordhaus, a veteran media executive and Emmy award-winning producer who's currently president and CEO of his own production company, Bormont Enterprises. Richard has worked in media for over 25 years. I've had the distinct pleasure of having worked with Richard for, let's just say, some of those years. He's been VP of production and programming at NBC Universal, responsible for overseeing some of their daytime shows, and he's been producer and showrunner for hit unscripted shows like Telemundo's The Voice and Big Brother, as well as shows for Roku, Facebook Watch, YouTube, and Univision, among others.
Throughout his career in both English language and Spanish language media, Richard has had to deal with talent and with a sometimes unreasonable circle of people around them, from managers and publicists to even family members. He's also had to face the demands and egos of top corporate executives, all while being expected to manage large teams and make huge returns on multi-million dollar budgets. No pressure. Richard is known for his great people skills and his really sexy voice.
Welcome to Surfing Corporate, Richard. Thank How's you. That for an intro?
Oh my gosh, that's an amazing intro. I'm going to pay you guys later. And it's a pleasure. I'm a big fan of not only both of you, but of your show. And I love what you guys are doing. So congratulations.
Thank you. We're going to dive right in, Richard, because in the intro, we did mention a few of the highlights from your career. And in media, obviously, we all come from that background. It's an industry where you do meet all sorts of personalities and you have to deal with egos of varying sizes. And you've been in it for so long and you've been so successful at it. Let's just start with, have you always been good with people, or is this something that you've had to work on given the field that you're in and the kinds of personalities that you have to deal with?
That's a great question, Glenda. Actually, you know, as far as being a people person, I'd like to say that's one of my strengths. I treat people the way I want to be treated, right? Both in my professional and personal life. I think that's one of my superpowers. I really like to listen. I like to talk too. Now in my 40s, I'm doing a little bit more listening and a lot less talking. It used to be the other way around. But no, I genuinely care about people. I want to hear their stories. I think it's so important to have those skills to be able to listen and to be able to talk and really mean it. Because some people are just like full of shit, pardon my French. And others are like, you can tell when someone's just like checked, right? I had to listen. But I really try to genuinely listen to everyone, from the person, you know, regardless of what their title may be or what their role is, right? But I really enjoy listening and talking.
Great. Would you say that's part of the secret sauce that you have in handling challenging personalities at work, or people that maybe have a little bit more of a difficult personality?
I would say so, because I think sometimes people in this industry, in my experience, right, in television, that is, in my experience, sometimes people can be very abrupt or short. And it oftentimes comes because you don't have the time, especially if you're in a breaking news scenario, right? You don't have the time to really give detail. You have to react. Sometimes in our capacity, you, no matter how much you try to plan, we often have to react. So sometimes people have more tact than others. I try to always, you know, even if I'm not able to give in the moment the detail that I want, I try to always offline with the person and like, hey, listen, I didn't mean to be short, but we were in a rushed situation and we had to do this or that. And I think people appreciate that. Like, it goes a long way. I think as a leader, you should always treat people the way you want to be treated and go the extra mile. And I think in this capacity, it's really important to have those people skills and to be able to kind of be one-on-one with your team and be able to be in the weeds with them and then be at a different level when you need to be as well, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally makes sense. As we said in the intro, you can't escape working with difficult people, working for difficult people, or having difficult people on your team. And when I say difficult, it's not necessarily jerks. It's difficult in the sense of maybe people are hard to read, or maybe people are you know, not as open, and you can't really understand where they're coming from.
And there's a great article that we found from Inc.com, and it talks precisely about 5 of the toughest personalities that you find in the workplace.
I've probably worked with them all, actually.
And more.
And I might have been accused of having all type of all top 5 personalities too. You never know.
And in this article, Dr. Judith Orloff, she's an assistant clinical professor of psychiatry at UCLA. She shares information about each of these top 5 difficult workplace personalities, so you can spot them and hopefully learn how to deal with them. So I would love to share with you and with our listeners and talk about our own experiences if we've ever stumbled across people like this and how we handle them. Okay, sound good?
Okay, go for it.
So the number one is the narcissist. So the narcissists have an inflated sense of their own importance and crave attention constantly, and they also crave praise. Dr. Orloff describes them as being self-absorbed and lacking the capacity for empathy. They don't really care what other people are feeling, and narcissists are also extremely sensitive to criticism of any kind and will probably react poorly. Interestingly, narcissists often do very well in positions of power because they take that power very, very seriously and often work really hard in those roles. So I don't know, Richard, Glenda, have you ever?
Am I blushing enough?
If we could have a camera right now, Richard is literally the color of like a red apple.
I really am. I could see myself and I'm like, stop, I want to talk already. Yes, I've worked with plenty of narcissists.
I never worked for a narcissist, but I certainly have dealt with narcissist bosses just, you know, as part of, you know, working as part of a senior leadership team. And I can say it's really difficult, because you can spot them at the beginning.
They're
very charming, and you can see that they are very, very smart, very cunning. And you know, last season Eileen and I had an episode about, you know, the worst types of bosses you can have, and the psychopath has some narcissistic tendencies. And when you think about it in actuality and how that plays out in a real life scenario, you think like, holy shit, that must be horrible to work for a boss like that. Because everything is about them. And no matter what you do, things are twisted in a way that makes it about them, which is really, really difficult because of exactly how you described it, Eileen. They have this own sense of self-importance. And
the
what
lack
I always
of
found.
Empathy. The lack yeah, of empathy that, is
like
what...
it's never about how is it affecting you? How is it affecting my team? How is this making me look good or bad if I'm something that's looking at, like, how is this about me? Everything turns, it's twisted and turned to make it about them. And you're like, what are you? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
This is so not about you right now.
And to your point, Glenda, that's the person where it's like, I, instead of we, I'm very much, I try to erase the word I from my work vocabulary. It's not
There's
I,
no
it's we,
I in
right?
team.
Exactly, right? I know that sounds cheesy, but it's true. I'm a big believer of, again, let the person know how they're making you feel, if they're crossing a line. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I demand respect. That's one thing. I'm very big on respect. You know, I treat others the way I want to be treated. I don't like when people use profanity or, you know, when things
you're in the wrong place.
I was like, have you heard about this? You know,
wait, you said you're French a couple of times. So come on.
Exactly.
Well, I know what Rich is talking about, though. Like when you're dealing with a higher up or even a colleague or something that works for you, you really don't want to have that lack of respect where it bleeds into just, you know, being profane just for the sake of it, because that doesn't get you anywhere. But I agree with what you're saying.
And when those things happen, listen, there's a difference of opinion. Let's talk about it, right? Let's offline, let's do it privately. And unfortunately, that's
I love Richard's. Let's offline.
Let's offline.
Let's offline. That's not corporate lingo at all.
At all.
All the time.
Yeah.
So switching gears to the next type of very difficult personality that sometimes you encounter in the workplace is the passive aggressive type. And Dr. Orlov says that the passive aggressive types are there and they look like they're going to promise to help you with a project, or they seem like they're super invested in wanting to give you a hand, but then they don't. And that passive aggressiveness, she says, is a form of anger, but it's not an outright form of anger. So it's not the in your face anger that bursts and tells you, blah, 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 and you know what you're talking about. You know that this person's angry. No, this person is very subtle, and this person sort of does it behind your back.
Oh, yeah.
And what's interesting is that you will probably get tempted to try to understand, and especially you and I, Richard, are very much in that same brain space of like, let me understand where this person is coming from. Let me try to understand why they're angry and get to the bottom of it. But interestingly, in this article, Dr. Orlov says, just don't go there. This person, a habitual passive aggressive person who exhibits that kind of behavior over and over and over again, doesn't deserve the time or energy that you or I or Eileen would spend on, or anybody really would spend on trying to figure them out. She says it's actually a character disorder. This is just something that makes them who they are. That's just how you deal with it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what you guys think about passive aggressives in the workplace, but I know I've definitely encountered them, and they are so difficult to work with, because at the beginning, you really do want to genuinely think that they want to help you. And then when they don't, and you start to recognize that there's a pattern in them, you're like, oh my God, just get away from me. It's really hard to deal with those kinds of things. At least in my experience, it's been really hard to deal with those people. And I just try to block them out, just have nothing to do with them whatsoever if I can. And obviously you learn, right? You learn that if they say, oh yeah, let me help you with that, you know exactly where that's going, and be like, no, I got it. Thanks so much though.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah. No, and listen, it's hard when you're dealing with someone that's passive aggressive. Like, I think the way I dealt with, you know, people that were passive aggressive in my 20s and 30s has completely evolved to now being 46, right? I think with time and with experience, you learn how to deal with those people differently. But for me, and better, I guess, for me, it's really hard because you don't know where you stand. Mm-hmm. Like they're portraying one thing, and then when you turn your back, it's like, eh! And I rather have that person that's like, listen, this is what I want, this is what I need, or whatever, or I'm not a fan of this. And it's like direct communication. I prefer that, even if their delivery may not be the best, as opposed to, oh yeah, everything's great, and then have that, like, those little jabs, right? And as Latinos, we're so good at throwing those little, as we would say, pullitas, those little jabs. And those jabs, where I'm at now, it's like, are you serious? No, I don't have time for that. So like, I will call people out now that are passive aggressive. I'll probably give you once, and then if it happens a second time, I will nip it in the bud.
Like, examples of this in meetings. If there's this big project that everybody's talking about, and there's an initiative, and it's an initiative that nobody wants to do, right? An example of what this person would do is say, let's say, oh my God, you know, Rick is such a team player, that I really think that Rick has absolutely all the strengths and he would be the best person to lead this initiative. Does everybody agree? Oh my God. Yes. Rick, go. That person just royally screwed you, but throwing you compliments in the way. So that is
brilliantly called passing the baton, right?
Evil. Yes. It took me a while to understand what was going on. Like, to your point, Richard, like, I'm much more comfortable with somebody who is up front.
In your face,
and,
yeah.
In your face, something. And you know where they're coming from. But this, like, having to think, okay, what's the agenda? Yeah. Like, what are they really
saying? What's the ulterior motive?
Yeah, yeah.
Exhausting. Exhausting. So that to me is, like, the worst. Okay.
Yeah.
So
and when that happens, just to close that out, when that happens, again, that passing of baton and that sprinkling, right, that flowery context of, like, let me build the person up, you could see right through it because you know they're going to come in and they're going to be like, oh, okay, there you go. That was your motive.
Yes.
And don't think I wasn't smart enough to pick up on it. Sure, I will pick up your slack or I will take more ownership in something, even though it might have been, you know, something that you should have been doing.
Yeah.
Cool. But then when that happens, and I think this is another good takeaway point, when that happens, and then when I'm put in that situation, then I exercise my ability to lead. Like, you're going to give me the responsibility, then I'm going to lead this. And at the end of the day, then you have relinquished your ability to lead that sector or that division. And now it's coming back to me. So we'll do it together. But ultimately, if I'm going to have the final say and I'm going to be responsible, then we're going to kind of do it differently. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that when that's happened,
Richard, I'm like, I think it's so great how even in this example of like a really shitty thing that somebody could do to you, you managed to take lemons and turn them into lemonade and make it more positive and make it something that you can actually get something out of. Let me tell you,
that's
a skill.
It is.
Thank you.
And I love the idea of sprinkles, like shit with sprinkles, shit with glitter. That visual is just like pretty amazing. Here, fairy dust.
I could use a little emoji. I could see you creating a little emoji.
Can you see it? Yeah, absolutely.
So the number three type of difficult personalities are the gossips. So every workplace, we know this, has a certain amount of gossip. It is human nature. But if you're a leader and one of your employees is one of those people that, you know, just really thrives in reporting negative things about you, about the company, about coworkers, that can really be very destructive. And even if you're not a leader, having just destructive gossip that is catty, that's mean, going on behind the scenes, that never leads to anything positive. You know, in the moment, it can feel good because, come on, we're human, right? There's like a juicy piece of information. You're like, oh, tell me. But as, you know, time goes by and as you grow in this career, you understand that that just is a time suck and that the whole atmosphere gets negative. It is not worth it unless it's really good gossip.
And this is to your point.
When and then maybe.
For the record, I absolutely hate gossip. And when even really juicy gossip comes my way, I will shut it down.
But truth be told, like, honestly, who hasn't gossiped? I've gossiped.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, at this point actually made me think and confront some of my own, you know, ways that I would relate to people. I was like, wait a minute, am I such an asshole? And again, it's not gossip for the sake of being a jerk or being mean to somebody else, let alone spreading something that's going to negatively impact the work that you guys are doing. Obviously, that's a really extreme and that goes without saying that that's wrong.
Yeah.
But if you think through the day-to-day of your work life, especially when we were all in an office, think about the number of times that somebody would walk into your office or you would be getting, you know, coffee or water or whatever, like the famous water cooler chit-chat. People talk about people just to talk, right? So it made me think, and I did a little digging because anybody who listens to our podcast knows that Eileen and I love to do research. I love to do digging when something comes up. And I found a really interesting statistic.
Okay.
Granted, this is from a 2019 study. So this is pre-pandemic, pre-COVID, when everybody was still working in the what we called normal times in an office. I want you guys to guess. What is the average number of minutes per day that people at work gossip?
I would say 30.
30 minutes a day?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think?
10?
10 minutes a day?
Yeah.
You're both so wrong. 52 minutes a day, according to a 2019 study. Mind you, again,
wow.
What's interesting, though, is that the gossip was, for the most part, according to the researchers, neither good nor was it bad. It was pretty benign and pretty sort of banal, just regular, common talk. So that's what I think is an interesting sort of distinction. And I wanted to make sure we talked about that because I want to make sure we talk real. I've also had situations where, you know, people that talk shit or they plant seeds so that you as a boss or you as a leader start to change the perception you have about somebody else. Mm-hmm. And you know when that's happening. Clearly that's wrong and that's unacceptable. And you really do, especially if you're in a leadership capacity, as you mentioned, Richard, you really do have to be able to just stop it. But I also wanted to just be real and talk about the fact that we all do gossip. And interestingly enough, a lot of researchers, especially there's a researcher out of the University of Toronto that says it's actually not bad because when you gossip and quote unquote gossip, when you talk to other coworkers about workplace situations or other colleagues or projects or whatever, that's kind of your way of gauging who's trustworthy and who's not. So that's how teams start to gauge how trustworthy or not other people are. I thought that was pretty interesting.
No, it's really interesting. And I've actually done that. I've been in a predicament where I've had coworkers or employees that you know they're a gossip and you actually use that to your advantage. When you want a message to get out, you tell that person.
Ah, so and, strategic gossip.
Oh, absolutely. It's all about strategy and it's all about, okay, I'm going to lean into your skill set to my advantage, right?
But I just think it's such an interesting topic in terms of trying to break down all the different personalities, because as we shift gears into the next one, and this one I know that we've all had very firsthand experience, I think most people have, because you can absolutely relate to the anger addict. Some people deal with workplace tensions by accusing their coworkers of misdeeds or yelling at others or generally just expressing very angry sorts of attitudes all the time. And these are kind of, I mean, if you look at it in the scale, these might be the most difficult kinds of personalities to deal with at the workplace because they're so vocal. And if they have an outburst, everybody hears about it. And Dr. Orloff in the article says that whatever you do, do not let them get away with it. That is absolutely unacceptable behavior. And anger addicts have to be given very strong limits and boundaries, because if not, that absolutely destroys a workplace and any sort of team that you're trying to build. And Richard, I think you've given us examples already of how you've tried to diffuse situations like that when they're outbursts and or when you have a difficult situation where somebody just reacts in a very strong, vocal way.
Yeah.
But there's one thing if it's a talent that comes occasionally. What if that person that has the anger outburst is like senior leadership, right? It's tricky. It's one thing if it's a coworker or somebody that works in another department, but what if that person is calling the shots and that person doesn't get called out because they're in senior leadership?
If you're in a position where that person is your leader, that person's your supervisor, your manager, whatever, it's hard to be able to step up and say, that's not right. That's not cool. But I do think that there are ways of doing that, because at the end of the day, if you don't stand up for yourself, if you don't let that person know right from the, and it's not necessarily at that moment, because then it's just going to, you know, turn into a screaming match. And that's, I've been involved in those situations and you don't get anything out of it.
When I was younger, I would tend to react at the same level. You get upset, the other person gets upset. You both say things that aren't warranted, and that is very unproductive. I think as you get older and as you go to therapy, you learn that reacting to people like that who are at this extreme intense level, you know, I've had people be yelling and being very, very out there, and you just like, I start speaking like lower and calmer, and it's like, you know what? Let's talk about this later. This is no longer productive. You're not being shut. Like, you're not going there, but you are shutting it down, and you're standing up for yourself without reacting in the same tone or manner. I think that has been helpful for me.
That's me too. It's not always easy, Aileen, because again, we have blood running through our veins, right? And when someone is literally turning red or screaming at you, it's hard. Yeah. And those with anger, I strongly encourage you, don't sit on it overnight. Like, you don't sleep on it. Like, you address it right away. Just like with gossip. I think both of those are like categories where it's like, no, you nip it in the bud if you can.
Yeah. Patience. So try to de-escalate in the moment, but then when that's the right. situation has, you know, cooled down, then address and say address this was it. Not okay.
And then the last top difficult personality to deal with at the workplace is the guilt tripper. The guilt tripper is the person who likes to lay it on really thick if they were given a less than stellar assignment, or if they think that somebody else got some perk that they didn't, or they feel someone slighted them. They let people know just how much of a grievance they have, just how difficult that slight was for them, how it made their life more difficult. And they try to do that to coworkers too. So they don't even do it just to their managers or leaders. They do it to coworkers like, woe is me. Oh, as poor me. I as never get the great job.
Yeah,
plays the victim. Exactly.
You know, oftentimes in my world, what's happened is the guilt tripper is one that offers to take on more work and then throws it in your face, right? Like,
as I was thinking through in my own experience, it was hard for me to come up with an example of somebody who did it very overtly for really no reason. But I did think of examples like what you just said of when somebody says, oh, no, don't worry, I got it, I'll do it. And then they make sure that you and everybody else remembers just how much effort that was or just how put out I shouldn't do it.
In
right.
my case, you know, I was a leader of many people and large teams. Mm-hmm. And what I would find is, again, not frequently, but there would always be here and there a person that always felt that they deserved better, right? So if somebody got a promotion and they didn't, but why did they get the promotion and not me? And you would explain why, but then it would be, and why did this person get this day off and I didn't? It was constantly, I deserve more. And some people do, and we could have a conversation, but these types of people, it would be a recurring thing. It was always, it's never enough. Never enough. I am a victim. Pobrecita yo. Pobrecito yo.
Yeah,
why
for me,
not
for me?
Why right not here. Me? And
that's
it was
exhausting.
As a boss, you know, like the first time it's like, okay. The second time it's like, okay, let me think. And then you just kind of realize, okay, this is an issue. This is a pattern of personality for this person. And you just end up not engaging. And it's like, nope. You avoid those people. So it's, if you don't use it strategically, and if you don't really have a reason, those types of people are a very massive turnoff for leaders.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And for leaders and for coworkers, for everybody, really.
Yes.
You can spot them from a mile away, and it gets and it gets old very fast.
Yeah.
Very fast.
So I guess on the opposite end of the spectrum, another thing that just came to mind was not so much guilt trippers, but people that are kissing your butt. And you know they're doing it with an ulterior motive. That's
so
probably one of my biggest pet peeves.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's one of my biggest pet peeves. It's like, I see right through you. That just rubs me the wrong way. I think we've all dealt with that in our careers.
Yeah.
And I would strongly suggest people try to develop a different tactic.
Yes,
to deliver that message.
We have an article from a specialist who really points out to key solutions to handling each type of these personalities. Glenda, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. And don't worry, listeners, we'll have a link to the article in our show notes. But yes, as Aileen was saying, so Starla Tenero is an executive coach, and she outlined a few things that you can do to deal with difficult people. And after reading the article, my takeaway is that it's basically on you. You can't change the other person to be less passive aggressive or less angry, or certainly not less narcissistic. But what you can do is change the way you deal with that kind of person or how you let those situations affect you.
Mm-hmm.
So in her article, basically, she says, ask yourself, is there a reason why this person in particular keeps pushing my buttons in a certain way? So that speaks to having a lot of self-awareness and a lot of keeping your composure, which is something that we've talked about a lot in this episode, and not letting that urge to spit back, you know, just as much fire as that person's giving you at that precise moment, because that's not going to lead to anything productive. Have empathy with the other person. Try to understand where they're coming from if you can. And obviously, don't take it personally, because if you're dealing with a narcissist, that's definitely not on you. That is a character disorder on that other person. Right. And it's not reflective of you. And I think just the last thing that's, you know, really important to think about is just being more proactive. If you know you're going into a situation with a person that you've had difficulty with in the past, focus on what you want to get out of that interaction and move on. Do not let that interaction, you know, dive into other things or spiral into other situations. Go in with exactly what you want to get out of it, very clear in your head, boom, and get out.
I'm going to add to that. Those difficult situations, I would come to the meeting with, this is how I would like for this to happen, but then I would have my option B, like alternate ending, right? Option C, and so on and so forth. And depending upon where the meeting is going, absolutely. You're like, okay, this isn't what I thought, but how about this? Yeah.
All right. So I think now it is time, Richard, for one of our favorite sections, which is called Corporate Confessions. So... maybe, why don't you say it, Richard, with that fabulous voice?
Corporate confessions.
Maybe we'll keep Richard's voice.
Yes. Okay, so what is your most despised corporate word or jargon?
Oh my God, gravitas. That word is so overused. It's so played out. It's used incorrectly. And very it was specific. Like gravitas, gravitas, gravitas.
Beetlejuice.
Yeah. And I think it was just misused.
Okay. So now shifting gears, definitely. What is the nicest thing someone has ever said to you?
There was one in particular that comes to mind. And this person is a veteran. And for Veterans Day, I don't know why I'm getting emotional, because it's taking me back to when it happened. But I brought this person some donuts on Veterans Day. I stopped, a coffee shop along the way, and I picked them up some donuts, and I gave them the donuts. And I tried to do it very discreetly, and the person started crying and like stood up and gave me a hug and said, that is the nicest thing that anyone's ever done for me. And that's why, you know, you're such a good leader, and, you know, you take the time to really be present, and thank you. You didn't have to do that. It makes you feel like, hey, it's worth it. Cause oftentimes you're working so many long hours and you're leaving everything, and you're missing birthdays, and you're missing a lot of family events. So when people acknowledge the amount of work and the quality of work that you're doing, that feels great.
Of course. Yeah. And on the flip side of that, Richard, what is the meanest thing someone has ever said to you?
Aside from F off.
F off. Go F off. When I had to let go of someone, I was told that I was like a spy, and that they knew I was always going to do that, and that I was just a yes person. That what you see wasn't what you got, which...
Oh, wow. That is super shitty.
Yeah, it was really shitty.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was told, and you know, that you're making a mistake and you're going to regret this, and so on and so forth. So that's hard, because it becomes, and listen, and you can't blame them. It goes back to in that moment, like they're hurt, their egos, their pride. So it's like
their livelihood.
Their livelihood. Yeah. So you have to understand, you're like, okay, so you stay quiet. You know, sometimes those kind of situations, like they take a day or two to get past, and
process.
Yeah.
You drink.
And that too. Yeah.
So moving on to, what is the biggest corporate wipeout?
My biggest corporate wipeout. There's been plenty of wipeouts in my career. I think those that say they don't have them, they're not being truthful to themselves.
That's bullshit.
We all have wipeouts, and we all make mistakes, and we all could have handled things differently. But it's what you do with that, like knowledge, and that, you know, turn it into a positive. That's where I think a true leader shines.
That's great advice. He responded our question, which was like, what's your top serving strategy? And I think you just answered that. Beautiful.
That was great. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so
this
much.
Was
my pleasure. For me, this was a pleasure. Thank you for allowing me to put my guard down as well, because I usually have it a little bit more up. You guys created a very inviting and safe space.
Thank you
so much.
Besito. Bye-bye.
This episode of Serving Corporate was produced and edited by me, Eileen Mercier, and improved dramatically by the feedback of Glenda Pakowitz. By the way, we are doing a survey about this podcast to get to know you better and make it a better experience for you. It's very simple, and if you fill it out, you might be the winner of an epic swag bag with the very coveted merch of Serving Corporate. The link to the survey is in the show notes. Remember, 2 minutes of your time will lead to lifelong happiness for me and Glenda. Our original theme song is by the amazing folks at Chaliwa Music. See you soon. Hang in there, corporate surfers.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.